Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome to the Getting Down and Wordy Podcast ad.
What do we do on this podcast?
Well, it's the first Edamusical podcast.
Can you try that again in real words so that people can understand?
Fine. We talk about the intersection of popular music and language.
Oh, can we also talk about Eurovision?
Okay.
Find us on Apple and Spotify.
We are a Podmoth Network podcast.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us again today for this episode. Declan, what story do you have today?
I'm going to be talking about Susan Smith and Mark Putnam. What are you going to be talking about?
Susan Smith name sounds kind of familiar, but it's also kind of a really average name.
Common name, yeah. Sounds like someone in witness protection.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly,
would you say the guy's name was?
Mark Putnam.
Mark Putnam. Okay. Interesting. I look forward to hearing about those people.
Are you gonna
and considering that... yours is the brutal story, I'm thinking bad things happen to at least one or both of them.
It's
yes.
Not.
Okay. Well, I am going to be telling you about a weird medical condition that I think, I know you don't like weird medical conditions and it usually makes you icky feeling. So I'm apologizing in advance because it might make you feel icky.
Okay.
Yeah. And for this story on the weird icky condition, I brought the cocktail known as the Golden Statue Prosecco cocktail. And the ingredients are 1 tablespoon of honey, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 4 chunks of frozen pineapple, 1 ounce of amaretto, 2 ounces of pineapple juice, and 2 ounces of Prosecco. The steps are to dip your champagne flute in honey and then into sugar so that you can rim your glass, because that's always fun, and allow that to dry for 5 minutes. Then place 3 to 4 frozen pineapple chunks in the bottom of your prepared glass, add your amaretto and pineapple juice, and then top with Prosecco. And if you want, you can also garnish it with an additional pineapple chunk on the rim.
Okay, let's give this a try.
So I
don't have a champagne flute, so.
Yes,
it's just
I did
cup,
not do mine in a champagne flute either.
Okay.
Because I have a champagne flute, but it is dark blue. And I thought I'm going to be able to get in a picture for our social media pages, it's going to look like just a dark blue glass. So I made mine in a low ball because it was fine. So here we go. I'm a little scared because amaretto is not very good sometimes.
Can be good. I don't think it'll be good in this.
Oh.
It's not great. Not a huge fan.
No. I like the Prosecco in it, though, because that makes it not quite as sweet.
Gives it a little tang, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't hate it, actually. Now that I have another sip, I'm like, oh, it's actually kind of... It's not terrible. It's okay.
It's okay. I don't think I'd make it again, but.
Yes. I would only drink it again if somebody else made it. I wouldn't go out of my way to make this.
If it was just at a party and someone had it, then maybe I'd have it again. But I'm more likely to just grab a beer or something.
Right. The website that I got this drink from, the idea behind this drink had to do with like the Oscars and winning, you know, like an Oscar party that people would have. And so the golden statue part of it has to do with that, which I've never been to an Oscar party. I don't really care about them. Award shows bore me. So.
I honestly don't care either. Like, a lot of the awards that they give is like, I don't think that should have been movie of the year or whatever.
Right. Yes. Yeah. If somebody wants to throw a party and have this fun cocktail there, I would probably come. But I'm not going to go just because it's like an Oscar party and we're going to sit around and watch the Oscars because yawn.
Yeah.
No, thank you. No, okay. Thanks. So to go with this statue is the name, and you'll learn why. In episode 41, we talked about the dancing plagues. So if any of the listeners out there haven't heard of it, go back to episode 41 and listen to the other bizarre medical condition that was the dancing plagues. It took place in centuries ago in Europe. Quick refresher, again, for those who might not remember or haven't heard the episode, the dancing plagues occurred more than once and mostly along the Rhine River. The epidemic involved sometimes a few and sometimes hundreds of people who danced. Sometimes the dancing was for fun. Sometimes some of them danced themselves to death. So,
weird.
Yes, the cause of the dancing plagues has never been discovered, and it might never be known. I bring up the dancing plagues because this other weird medical condition that we're going to talk about is the opposite. This condition is called, it's known as encephalitis lethargica.
Hmm.
And yes, it is. Again, the opposite. Encephalitis is an infection in the brain. It's not a good thing, typically.
No, that doesn't sound good.
And it's not something that you want to have. In general, it's just an inflammation of the brain. It has many possible causes, including viral or bacterial infection. It could be caused from an autoimmune inflammation where the body's immune system attacks the brain. Definitely don't want that. It could be caused by insect bites, and sometimes no one knows what causes it. You're going to feel real uncomfortable here when you get the details of it.
Okay.
I know. It's icky and
I hate that. It wigs me out so much. Ugh.
Yep. Just wait. You're going to get real wigged out. So that's just encephalitis as a general condition that could be caused from all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the cause, encephalitis can be fatal at times, but I'm going to tell you about a strange version of encephalitis that's called encephalitis lethargica. The symptoms of this disease are usually a headache, fever, sore throat, double vision, delayed physical and mental response, catatonia, so like in a trance, sleep disturbances, as well as fatigue and extreme lack of energy or lethargy, which is like, you know, the fancy lethargy is the fancy name for saying I'm tired.
That's what it feels like. And it sounds like anytime I get like the flu really bad. It's just,
yeah, but
like,
it get
just like
I'm just real tired. But this is different because there's other stuff that happens with it. So don't worry next time you get the flu and you're tired. Don't think that you have, I'm going to shorten it to EL. Don't think that you have that.
Okay.
Because there's other things that go along with this. In acute cases, it can also cause coma, abnormal eye movements, upper body weakness, muscle pain, tremors, neck rigidity, and psychosis. Of course, there has to be
like
something
Webster
different.
Webster Dictionary. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
All these things that.
All these things. It could be other things.
You have EL. You have a headache?
You
it's
have
probably EL.
EL. Yes. It could be EL. Of course, there's something different about this disease in order for me to be talking about it, because we're not just talking about encephalitis. I mean, yes, that is a disease that people get. It's horrible. Nobody wants it. But this one's really weird. What makes it weird? The common name for it is the sleeping sickness, and victims of the disease are often described as living statues. So back to our cocktail name, the golden statue. There have been cases with similar symptoms going back as far as the 1500s, but it didn't get its specific name until 1916, when cases started popping up at what would be the beginning of the epidemic of the disease in 1917. 16 is when it kind of started, but then from 1917 to 1928, it's estimated that an affected population, it was about 1 million people were affected by it, they think. But again, this is 1916. It's not like diagnosing skills were the top of everyone's skill list. So they don't know for sure. I saw references that said it was 500,000 up to 1 million. So they don't really know how many people. It did start in Europe, as most good diseases back in the day started in Europe. It did spread to the rest of the world, though. People who had the disease were alive, but basically trapped in their immovable bodies.
Oh my God. That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's really, it's yucky. Those suffering from the disease would often freeze in place in the middle of an activity like eating or working. When this would happen, it was common to seek help from a psychiatrist first rather than a medical doctor. Because they're like, they went loco. They went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, so we got to get them to a shrink, when it was actually a medical condition. So in the early days, it was often thought that the person had epilepsy, hysteria. I love hysteria as a diagnosis. It cracks me up all the time. I'm hysterical. I have hysteria. They also thought that maybe they were intoxicated somehow, or that they were having a bad reaction to some kind of drug that they had taken. During the time of the epidemic, about a third of the people died. So it did cause some deaths. About half of the people that survived it couldn't physically interact with the world around them and could only sit by and watch. Some
so
are capable
just comatose
of
the whole time.
What they're awake and they can watch you and they can see what you're doing. They just can't really interact with you. Right. Some people could have, they had some limited speech and some limited movement, but for the most part, they were just still sitting in a chair or laying in bed and not being able to participate with anything that's going on around them.
Wow.
It that's could terrible. Last, I know, it could last hours to days, weeks, or even years, which is even more terrifying to think like, okay, hours, yeah, that would be scary. Days, super scary. But I'm looking at years of sitting in this chair and just watching things go by me and not being able to interact with it at all.
It wasn't like contagious at all, right? Because you said it could be caused from infection. It wasn't.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they don't know.
I don't know. It's scary.
One clinician noted that the victims of the disease look like they are suffering from a severe secondary dementia with minimal noticeable emotions, but yet their mind is fully intact and aware. So they're like flat affect, no response, but they know everything that's going on around them.
So you mean like, would it fix it?
Well, we're going to talk about there's okay. still more stuff that goes with it. So some victims also suffered from post-encephalitic Parkinson's disease. So like tremors, people that have Parkinson's don't have coordinated movement. And it can occur to anyone who suffers from encephalitis. So not just this kind of encephalitis, but any kind of encephalitis can cause Parkinson's-like symptoms after the fact. Although on the timeline, Parkinson's increased after the EL epidemic, there is no causal link known between a viral infection and Parkinson's, so it might just be circumstantial. But again, they don't really know this was a viral infection. The cause and treatment for encephalitis lethargica is not known, which makes it super scary and creepy to think that you could get it and have, they don't have any idea what caused it, how to treat it, how to minimize the symptoms, how to make you better, nothing. They don't know.
That's fucked up. That's so scary. Mm-hmm.
Some researchers noticed a potential link time-wise with the 1918 pandemic of Spanish flu. That argument is that the spike in EL cases came about 4 years after the spike of the pandemic flu. However, that argument's been contested. Researchers in 2008 stated that there is no direct evidence supporting influenza as the cause for EL. Another argument against the Spanish flu being the causation for EL would be the actual timeline, because the Spanish flu began in 1918, but that was after when EL epidemic started. So the EL epidemic started 2 years before. So you can't say.
Yeah, well, it must have been another timeline that happened, or another event that happened 2 years before.
Right. But you can't say that the Spanish flu caused encephalitis lethargica when that condition pre-existed. So I would wonder if there's throw like that a new option out there.
Bar of soap that came out or something, and it just like had lead in it.
Yeah.
It's just poisoning them.
Other researchers believe the condition is likely an autoimmune disease in which the body's own immune system starts to attack the brain. And others link the cause of EL to possibly a bacterial infection, similar to the bacteria that causes strep throat or pneumonia. Suggested treatments include steroids and medications used to treat Parkinson's disease, but those appear to be addressing more just the symptoms rather than curing the disease. So the thought is
kind of fucked up from it.
Yeah. The thought is that they're just treating the Parkinson's symptoms, not actually treating EL. But part of the problem is that the main epidemic was, you know, over 100 years ago, and there's not really any new, like, there's not a huge case explosion since then. So they don't really know what caused it back then. They don't know what could cause it now. They don't know anything except that people would just turn into statues.
It's freaky. Yeah, very, I don't want freaky. That to happen to me.
I think I would rather have the dancing plague than EL. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Even if I died rough. From, if I danced myself to death, that would be better than just
being frozen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're paralyzed, basically.
Yes, exactly. So that's my story. The icky, uncomfortable medical condition that I knew would make you feel very...
I didn't like that.
I know. You hate those stories that I do. I'm sorry.
Okay, let's talk about not so. My story's not any better, but it's not gonna gross me out as much.
Right.
This one isn't horrible. Susan Daniel Smith was born in 1961 in Matawan, West Virginia, to Sid Daniels, an unemployed and former coal miner, and Tracy Daniels, a housekeeper. She was the fifth of nine children. And her parents moved to Freeburn, Kentucky when Susan was an infant. When Susan was 15 years old, she met 22-year-old Kenneth Smith. The two married about 2 years after they met, and over the course of their 7-year relationship, Susan gave birth to two children. Kenneth was a meth dealer, which ultimately caused Susan and Kenneth to divorce.
Oh, that's not a good thing.
Yeah. No. However, they continued living together in the same house and remained friends. So, not and that okay. much better. But at least now they're not technically married.
Right. I mean, they have kids together, so I could see the benefit of staying in the same household for the kids. But
true.
Yeah. He's still a meth dealer, right?
Yes. And with okay. Kenneth being a meth dealer... It goes hand in hand with shady friends.
Usually, yes.
One of which was a man named Carl Lockhart, who had gotten away with robbing a bank in the past. Carl had his eyes set on another bank and was telling his plan to Kenneth and Susan. This sparked an idea in Susan's brain. Susan had been trying to stack up enough money to move out of her ex-husband's house and set herself up in another town. See, Carl was actively being investigated by the FBI, specifically an agent named Mark Putnam. One of Susan's friends at the sheriff's office had previously told her that the FBI will pay their informants if they give good enough evidence. So when she heard Carl talk about the robbery, she started creating a plan of her own. As soon as she heard Carl's big scheme, she called up Mark and set up a meeting. Shortly after their meeting, Carl did in fact rob a bank and stole thousands of dollars. Thanks to Susan's information, all the banks in the surrounding area stacked up on dye packs, and when Carl tried to exchange the money, he was arrested. Since her information was useful, she was awarded $5,500, which is about $15,000 today.
That's nice. That's a cute little payday.
Paycheck. Seeing the amount of money she made, Susan started working with the FBI more. Mark was her contact, if they're paying that much. Only problem is she did have to testify in court. So.
Okay. That's not terrible. I mean,
it kind of sucks. If you live in a small town like that.
That's true. Okay. You get to be the snitch. Yeah, you don't want to be the snitch.
And now your meth dealing house ex-husband. Roommate knows you're right. Snitch for the FBI.
You're a snitch.
So that's not a good look.
Ooh, no, yeah. No. You got to learn to sleep with one eye open if you're going to be living with a meth dealer
exactly.
And you're a snitch get those FBI. Stitches, you know.
Yeah. Since Mark was her contact in the FBI, they started spending more time together. And about a year after Carl was arrested, their relationship became sexual.
Yeah. Oh.
Not
okay,
the
so
most professional.
She's having sex with the FBI agent.
Yep.
Okay.
It's like one of those weird books old ladies read. With Fabio on the cover.
Oh. God.
They met up a couple of times before Mark was transferred to Florida. A few months after Mark moved to Florida, he returned to wrap up a case. Susan got word that he was coming into town, and she had some very big news to tell him. Susan was pregnant, and the baby was his.
Oh, I did not see that one coming.
Ruh-roh. I don't think he did either, because Mark did not take this news well and offered to adopt the baby so that he and his wife could care for it. Yeah, Mark is married. And his
you buried that lead. Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sleep with your CI, especially if you have a wife. Or a spouse kind. Bad news. Okay.
So dumb. This guy's so dumb.
Yes.
Susan refused and they parted ways for the day. On June 8th, 1989, Mark contacted Susan to talk about the baby. He picked her up in his rental car and drove out to an empty clearing. After a short argument, Mark lunged over the center console and strangled Susan.
Of course he did.
He placed her body in the trunk and drove away. With nowhere else to hide the body, Mark went back to his hotel and came up with a plan. The following day, he drove along an old coal mining road and dropped her body. When Susan's sister tried calling her house, there was no answer. So a few days later, after Mark killed Susan, her sister stopped by to check in on her. After she learned that Susan had not been back to her house for 3 days, she immediately filed a missing person report. And since Mark is FBI, he was actively looking into this case, supposedly.
Of course he was.
Along with the sheriff's office and other FBI agents in the area.
Right.
After they found out that Mark was the last person to have contact with Susan, he was the main suspect in her disappearance. He was brought in for a polygraph test, but it seemed like he didn't study because he failed the lie detector. He then admitted to the murder of Susan Smith. As soon as he failed it, he just spilled the beans.
Oh, well, that's
and the
nice.
Craziest
that
part...
There's a crazier part?
Well, it's not that crazy. It's just crazy to me. He was sentenced to 16 years for first-degree manslaughter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the first FBI agent to ever be convicted of murder, too. So. Super weird.
He
probably had a hell of a lawyer or something.
Well, I would think so. I mean, 16 years is not a very long time for
You're
that.
Killing a pregnant That's... lady?
Yeah, no,
Isn't
that's
that...
not okay. Well, it depends on the state, I think, whether or not they would count the unborn
Kentucky,
child.
Kentucky, that's probably... They'd probably count that in Kentucky.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's not a nice guy.
No.
No.
Yeah, I would not want to hang out with that.
I'm wondering if he... gets to be in protective custody in prison because, you know, they say that cops don't do very well in prison because, you know, they're law enforcement. So he's big time law enforcement. I wonder if he had to be if he had to get some special accommodations or something. Because I would want that if I were him, but I also wouldn't strangle somebody.
So he got out, and right now he's working as a personal trainer.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. I bet
in Georgia.
I wonder if he's still married.
That's funny. No, I don't think so.
His wife kicked him to the curb when she figured out that he'd cheated on her and then murdered his mistress, his pregnant mistress. That's crazy. Yeah, I would. I would divorce that guy too.
Oh, do you have a chaser?
I do have a chaser. Mine is a watch recommendation for a new show on Netflix that's called The Three Body Problem. Mm-hmm. And it's like a sci-fi alien show. It's very scientific, like, and it jumps back and forth between timelines a little bit. So you kind of have to pay attention to it more than just like it's on in the background and you're scrolling on your phone. It's a pretty decent show though. I liked it. It's a little, you know, short series, several episodes, and they do some stuff in it that I'm like, why?
I think Carter recommended it too, but I'm not sure if that's the name or the actual show, because he recommended some sciencey show to me, but I didn't watch it yet.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty good. I would recommend it. How about you? Do you have a chase on?
I also have a watch recommendation for a movie called On the Line. I can't even like give you too much information on it without spoiling it.
Oh, okay.
But it's got like a super crazy twist ending. But basically this guy is a very controversial radio host who hosts people like live on the air. They call in and they talk about their problems and he gives them advice or something. And a disgruntled caller puts his family in danger.
Oh.
And he has to deal with it live on the air. It's
it's pretty interesting.
It's got Mel Gibson in it.
It sounds very familiar. I think I have seen it, but because my short-term, long-term, all-term memory is Swiss cheese, I will watch the whole thing and not know I watched it until I get to the end. So I could probably watch it three times and not remember.
I was getting kind of like upset with the movie, and then the ending was it made the whole movie. Because it was like, these people are dumb. Like, why can't you figure it out? And then they pulled the curtains on me.
Okay. I have a hard time watching movies where all the characters seem stupid. But if I know that it's going to like resolve at the end, then I can handle it. But if I'm just sitting there wondering how more dumb could these people get, then I get really frustrated.
Yeah, this one is like,
I'm pretty sure it's an older movie.
Pretty good. 2022, I believe.
Oh, really? Maybe I haven't seen it then.
Let me double check that. I just watched it.
Okay. If it is.
It's got, 2022.
Okay. Then maybe I haven't seen it after all. Okay, I'll have to check it out.
I don't really recognize anyone in there other than Mel Gibson.
Okay. Cool. All right. Nice chatting with you.
Did not enjoy hearing that story.
I know.
Nice chatting with you too. Mm-hmm. All right.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.